Sarah Lynn Bontobi.
Jackie Camp with Clark County.
Sean Blythe with the City of Vancouver.
Holly High, Port Vancouver Facilities. Jason Campbell.
And
Miss Camp,
same.
Brian Wilson is an architect.
Jan Clemens was an architect.
Brock Manley.
Is there somebody in the back?
Yeah.
I don't think I asked this question about the master plan.
Okay. That was on the hearing, right? Page one?
Yeah, page one.
That might have been Sean. We'll check the tape on that.
You can credit for it. Sounds like a intelligent question.
Anything else that anyone sees that we can make edits on?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We have a motion.
I move that we approve the minutes for September 6th.
I second the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Are we waiting on Rob or Sean?
I haven't heard from them. Success events up to you if you want to do.
Oh, he's sick. He's at the end of two.
We have a quorum, so.
We're missing Sean and
Rob.
Rob, so you said he's not coming?
Robert Hines. Is
oh,
okay.
Sorry.
Wait,
two. Two Robs.
All right, so well, let's get forward then to our public hearing tonight. Is for a certificate of appropriateness for the Nelson Farmhouse. Do any of our questioners have any announce your expert conflicts of interest in this project?
I want to have Sharon present the staff report. So,
I'll go ahead and read this. This is file HST 2016-00003, design review on the certificate of appropriateness for proposed exterior modifications at the Nelson Farmhouse. So, the summary, the historic Nelson Farmhouse is located at 12615 Northeast 5th Avenue, Vancouver, Washington. Property owners Jason and Lisa Kemp have applied for a certificate of appropriateness for exterior modifications. The farmhouse is listed in the Clark County Heritage Register. Exterior modifications to the farmhouse will be reviewed by the Historic Preservation Commission to ensure no significant impact to the historic site. The application states there will be exterior modifications, including removal of detached garden shed, plumbing chase, and installation of a new detached garden shed. The background is that the house was built by Emmanuel Nelson, immigrant from Sweden, who moved to America and settled on 40 acres of land north of Vancouver in 1891. The farmhouse, which he designed and built in that same year, represents what remains today of the original farmstead. It appears to be one of the last remaining farmhouses from the early settlements of the Salmon Creek era. The house is a good example of vernacular Greek revival farmhouse of the late 19th century. Over the past 118 years, the farmstead has changed due to the development of the area and the alterations to the property. Much of the original Nelson farmstead's 40 acres was sold and developed in 1977 into the residential subdivision known as Wood Creek Edition. Although the land surrounding this historic structure has been developed into an urban neighborhood, the Nelson farmhouse still stands with many original materials, such as siding, windows, and doors. The farmhouse and the Nelson's history provide an important reminder of the lives of the early settlers of Clark County, specifically those that settled in the Salmon Creek area. And we'll go to the findings, number one on page three. Just read through these for the record. Every reasonable effort shall be made to provide a compatible use for a property which requires minimal alteration of the building structure or site in its environment. The findings are the attached garden shed and plumbing chase was not part of the original historic structure, nor is it mentioned in the nomination. Removal of these two elements will allow the owners to remove dry rot that's affecting the exterior siding. Removing this attached shed and plumbing chase should further prevent water damage from affecting the main historic structure. The proposed detached garden shed will provide necessary storage in place of the attached shed. The proposed location appears to have minimal visual impact from the street. Two, the distinguishing original qualities or character of building, structure, or site in its environment shall not be destroyed. The findings. The attached garden shed and plumbing chase are not original. The attached shed is causing potential damage to the original historic materials of the house. If removed, the owners will undertake work to repair and preserve the siding and two windows on the main structure, and if needed, replace siding with custom milled profile and exterior paint to match the rest of the house. The proposed exterior modification would return the historic structure closer to its original condition. Three, all building structures and sites shall be recognized as products of their own time. Alterations that have no historical basis and which seek to create an earlier appearance shall be discouraged. The findings. Staff does not believe the removal of the detached garden shed and plumbing chase significantly alter the historic site. The design of the new detached garden shed is sympathetic to the design of the main house in that it's all wood, with a gabled roof and double barn-style locking door with shingles and exterior paint that match the main house. The siding of the new detached garden shed is discreet and screened by trees. 4. Changes which may have taken place in the course of time are evidence of history and development of a building structure or site in its environment. These changes may have acquired significance in their own right, and this significance shall be recognized and respected. The findings are that the garden shed and plumbing chase were not originally part of the historic main structure. They were improperly installed, leading to water damage and dry rot. Staff does not believe the materials and construction have historic significance in their own right. 6. Deteriorated architectural features that shall be repaired rather than replaced whenever possible. Findings. The owners have stated in their proposal that if damage has been done to the main structure, once the shed and plumbing chase are removed, they will repair and preserve the siding, windows, and trim to match the existing components. The owners propose the following repair and preservation components. Siding replacement with custom milled profile to match the original. Repair of two small windows, including flashing and trim. Exterior painting to match the rest of the house. 8. Every reasonable effort shall be made to protect and preserve archaeological resources. To staff knowledge, the proposed removal of the garden shed and plumbing chase, in addition to the detached garden, should not affect any archaeological resources. 9. Contemporary design for alterations and additions to existing properties shall not be discouraged. When such alterations and additions do not destroy significant historical, architectural, or cultural material. Staff does not find that proposed changes destroy any historical, architectural, or cultural materials of the property. 10. Whenever possible, new additions or alterations to structures shall be done in such a manner that if such additions or alterations were to be removed, the essential form and integrity of the structure would be unimpaired. Findings. The addition of the attached garage shed on the site can easily be removed in the future without impairing the integrity of the existing main structure in this landscape. Oh, read the recommendations. Okay. Staff believes the proposal meets the applicable criteria as stated above.
Do you have any questions for staff?
Do we know when the plumbing chase was installed?
The applicants may know that. It wasn't part of the nomination.
We're guessing in the 80s when they did the upper one. You can guess.
Did a similar described modern Home Depot plus material?
Yeah.
used in the construction of the plumbing chase.
Any other comments for staff?
And before we start, can you make sure if you could say your name and your address and whoever else wants to comment.
Okay. What's your word to comment? So Lisa Kemp at Nelson Farmhouse, and this is our very first meeting since we're kind of new to the house and starting to do some work on it. So I wanted to say thank you very much for having us here tonight. It's a very, very interesting experience. I've always been interested in older homes, but this is the first time we've owned one, so it's the first time we're actually going through the procedures. Thank you for having us tonight.
This is also also the time for us to ask a question from the application.
Yes.
Reviewing it, it was really well put together. And mm-hmm. very clear as to what you want to do. And reading it, I clearly understand the problem and what you're planning to replace it. So those are all really great aspects of the application. So if we have any questions or comments, this would be the time.
I really like what you're doing. I think it's great. That's, you're going to solve some problems that you may not even know exist yet. Because if you probably drive around in the framing,
yeah,
it may turn into an expensive repair. But the plumbing chase is probably there. It is plumbing. There is water. So you might consider, you know, maybe a strip of heat tape or something that could be controlled by a thermostat, so when it gets down to 10 degrees like it does here, and that upstairs totally gets flushed, mm-hmm. and that, you know, that would probably be a messy problem. But, anyways, the, like the trim below the windows, mm-hmm. really nice family, just Scandinavian, and expensive. That's clearly a Swedish influence.
The siding is cedar?
Yes. And we've gotten quotes for the mail. This is Jason with Kemp, 12615. It's all cedar, and we've got quotes to the mill. Right now, we're estimating about 500 million feet that might be involved as the initial estimate.
Just on that one side, we can chase them.
So I am understanding that correctly. All of the conduit and the pipe is going to be left exposed.
Correct.
Another
question. The windows above the shed and the window around the side are the aluminum horizontal sliders.
Correct.
Yeah. Are you thinking of replacing those?
At a later date. So we're kind of having to do this in steps. The expense for the siding, the siding alone is pretty substantial. So at some point in the future, we're looking at the kitchen and bringing it back into a little more alignment of what it may have been. Right now, they put a look like, my understanding is that there was a remodel that occurred in the kitchen in the 80s at some point, and they had put soffits in and reduced the ceiling height. The original ceiling height of the kitchen area is 10 feet, and now it's about 80 some change. And at that time, when we were looking at restoring the ceiling height and kind of bringing it back into something that's a more period appropriate in the kitchen, we were looking at possibly bringing those windows, you know, at a future date into a wooden sash similar to what we have. We really like those old style windows. So that's the plan long term. Short term, right now, like you said in the proposal, is to get the flashing situation taken care of, repair any rot that we have, finish out the trim so it looks, you know, it's going to look very similar to what's there for right now until we get to the next phase. So we'll start looking at the kitchen. The kitchen's probably going to be in about 2018. Pretty capital intensive. So,
and a bit more about those windows, Lisa Kemp from Boston Farm House. That from the interior, it appears that the one on the left, which is actually part of the laundry room, it appears that it was a double hung, and they just put in a short window and then made a shelf underneath from the inside. And then the other one to the right is actually a bathroom downstairs, and it appears that that was the long rectangle that probably opened in this direction, because it now has a shelf. You kind of see a little bit where the siding is cut just to the left of that window on the picture, and there is a shelf area on the inside that done with that as well, but it's got the original trim where the original window is on it, so we intend to replace those when we do the one bathroom remodel and then the kitchen laundry remodel.
And for the siding, you said you're going to, it'll have to be milled?
Yeah, the profile on the original siding isn't the same, so we took a sample. We can't, there's nothing commercially available that's like that. And if we wanted to do something, at least I want to match what's on the house, you know. And, you know, same thickness, same everything. So in order to get that done, that's requiring a custom wood job.
So that's going to be the cedar?
I'd encourage you to look around a little bit more, because that's a really common profile.
Sure.
And so,
well, the thing
is, you might luck out and find it. You might not.
Well, actually, we did look around. One of the things when we took the sample off, it's kind of it's an interlocking PG, mm-hmm. But the way where it's interlocking, the tongue profile and the groove profile don't line up to where the stuff that you can buy commercially where it lines up. The garage, which is the structure that's built at a much later date, you know, in the 90s, has something very similar.
Mm-hmm.
But when you hold them up next to each other, they don't even, the curves don't even line up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, yeah, we've looked around. You know,
okay.
We've got three different quotes, and they varied pretty much. They varied, I won't say wildly, but they varied quite a bit. And we picked the one in the middle. So. We're comfortable with the siding aspect of it. You know, not like we redo all the siding. We preserve stuff. We'd rather preserve it in one place. So that's our main goal there. Does that answer your question?
It does. It was more of an encouragement.
Yeah, no, I...
absolutely, all on board with matching the profile. I just know that sometimes these historic profiles will just... They'll pop up randomly in a lumber yard. And it's worth the a little bit of extra time to find it because... Searching is way cheaper than belling.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Do we have any more questions for the applicant? How is the siding holding up in the rest of
the when we had our general and our painting contractor come out for estimations, the painting contractor was really impressed with the longevity of the siding. Especially on this side of the house here, which is this is the east side of the house, the southeast side of the house. We have a lot of trees and those kinds of things. You certainly can see grain in the wood. But the majority of the house of the original siding is fantastic. I mean, it's been taken care of, to be honest with you, over the years. I know that there were periods of time in the house's history where it wasn't as taken care of, but it really is substantial. I mean, the siding's thick. It's pretty thick siding. So, it's in good condition. So the painter was actually pretty impressed with the condition of the siding in the village. So.
If you have any more questions, we
have
to
open it
to anyone else.
And just one last one. Do you know if that porch is original? It has nothing to do with the application.
Oh, porch was original.
Okay.
No, I think it was originally a carport. The verbal history. Which porch? The front porch or the...
This one that's...
On the front?
Yeah.
The front of the house?
With the brackets?
Yeah, so that was... The porch is original. In fact, we have a photo from 1893?
Mm.
Yes.
Ish?
Yeah.
Right.
The original.
There you go. Yeah. So one of the things we're... Again, this will be in the future. Obviously, the porch... looks to be wooden construction. Today it's not wooden construction. They poured a concrete slab there. But one of the projects that I have is to get the beams and the balusters and the rail there back to something that looks like that versus what's in there right now. So taking the concrete out, most likely not. It's a pretty substantial pour.
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but I certainly would like to get the front of it here. Looking very similar to the way it is printed in this picture, and I would if I don't know if you guys have access to the archives with Jackie does, we would love to see another photo of the house
from another angle.
From another angle. it's killing us because it's
the back of the house would be great.
Yeah, we'd love to see the back of the house because that'd give us a lot of insight about the construction over the years. Because there's a lot of questions when we walk through the house. We had the floors restored. First moved in back to the original fur that's in there.
Gorgeous.
And it's beautiful, wormholes and all. But it also opened up a lot of questions about construction over the years. And so we'd love to these are the only archival photos or family photos that we have access to, so unfortunately. But yeah, I would love to know what the back of the house looks like. So.
We're going to try a genealogy website. I know the Farlands mailed people. And this is all they got back with those three pictures from the front. So we thought maybe we would try through the genealogy websites and say we'll take any pictures from any family member inside, outside the house, whatever, and see. Because we're really guessing when you get to the back of the house because there are no photos whatsoever. And that kitchen, bathroom, laundry area was added at some point because the original farmhouse didn't have water in 1881. So it's kind of a guess. The front porch is very sad. When we were getting the front the floors done, when you open that front door, it goes just over a little doorstep, and then you can just see it was just whacked off. So it was probably a beautiful wood front porch at one point in time. Very frustrating.
The reason I ask is, it says here it's a Greek revival, but it's not. It's a Queen Anne.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So you see those on that front gable, the two returns? That's a classic Greek revival detail, but it lacks the balance. And then with the way that the porch is arranged and the way that it comes together, a Queen Anne is like a Hungarian goulash of a style. And it often has prominent Greek revival elements.
Sure.
Like this one, especially this pediment, but you know, most American vernacular has Greek revival elements, but the how it's, you have this prominent element in the corner, and then the Victorian elements throughout, especially in that historic photo of the porch, that's what gives it away as a Queen Anne. Just so you know.
That's fantastic.
We'll take that.
Yeah.
So the back of the house looks significantly different. Got sort of the 80s windows, so they popped out the old, because there's a sash next to a conventional window, a picture window inside. There's three different windows on your upper level, so do you have any idea what happened?
So, my understanding is that they've had a couple remodels since 77. So, the people that bought the subdivision in 77 lived in the home while they developed the subdivision. And then they subsequently sold the home, and they were also the folks that bought the home from the Nelsons, is my understanding. And after that, there were a couple owners, I don't recall their names. The Farlands were the last owners, but the owners prior to the Farlands, I believe, did the master bedroom upstairs, the master bedroom, bathroom, dormer area, which is, so that's that picture window above on both sides, the dormer on the east side, the picture window and the master on the south side of the home, and those are done in vinyl. And then below, this is why I believe the kitchen was a little earlier in the 80s, they had the aluminum windows, and there's an interesting anomaly with the siding in the back where, unfortunately I don't have pictures of this, but where about 6 foot up on the siding, it jogs out about an inch, and it goes up all the way up to the top. Not structurally, it's just the siding. There's a jog out, and I'm not entirely sure why that was. So, from a timing perspective, I'm guessing the original structure, at least what family letters and folks that have been around the house, there was a kitchen that was put on at some point. Don't know when that was. And then there was I guess I would describe it as a hurricane porch, kind of in a back porch. And if I look at the, you can see right there. So right there across the back there. So this is the south of the house. And you can see that line across the lower windows. That's that about 3/4 inch, 1 inch jog out of the siding. Not entirely sure why that is, but if I look at the original foundation, which is the red brick foundation, that goes to the entire perimeter of the house, including this back south side. So there's always been something on the back of the house. That's why I'm craving to see photos from way back, because that would give up, how this all was built. And if there's a profile of the house looking towards the east from the west side of the house, when you crawl up into the attic space, they left the whole roof, the roof structures. And they, they of course put the frame, they framed a new roof, this new roof here, and they hipped it into the existing roof, and then if there's a modern photo of the front, you can see kind of a panel at the top of the roof. at any rate, it's, you can see where they've added stuff over the years. The different, the roof lines changed. I counted at least twice that the roof lines changed. When we had the floors done in the master bedroom, they weren't tight fur. They were loosely laid fur, like a subfloor, but in the same style of fur that was in the rest of the house, which left some questions. And then when that came up, the house structure, the ceiling in the kitchen and the walls, all have horizontal TNG. I'm going to say it's about 6 inches by about 3/4 inch thick. And then they had a silk screen on that, and then they new wallpaper to that. That's what they had done. But I can see in the kitchen that paneling, the TNG, he did the walls, the ceilings, all of it in this paneling, and then he would add whatever the wall coatings he selected. And I could see that in the kitchen. So that leads me to believe that there was a roof, at least out to the final foundation demarcation. Now, I don't know if it was a second floor at that point or not, or if it was a deck, or what they had. Again, now that's basically all I really know about the construction of the kitchen and the time. You know, I know of at least two major functions just by looking at the roof in the United States, that there were two major points of construction and possibly a third.
We've spoken to, I think the last one was Henderson Windows I had out, and she looked at all the windows throughout the house because we want to replace the some of the vinyls and then the aluminum sliders so they look like the original windows. So when we do each project, when we do the kitchen, we're going to do the kitchen windows, we do the bathrooms, we're going to do the bathroom windows, and so eventually they will all be the wood-framed windows from the outside that will be as similar as we can get in today's construction to the original windows.
So we'll be seeing you a lot over the next few years.
You will.
Over the years, you will. We'll be able to still long-term relationship.
The original windows, though, are staying. The
we
old
love the original. We'll see some of us come and go in that
time. That upper level might have been like a consumption porch, which was pretty common back in that
area. Oh, okay.
Okay. So you might look that up.
Okay, yeah.
All right. So this is the time for anyone in the public. So, just near list of houses go about the process of closing the public hearing before we made our motion. So, just skipping that to the end.
I guess it's a public comment, maybe.
Oh, okay. Alright, so we'll close the public comment period and move to the commission. There's a motion. Is that petition open to hearing?
I would move that we approve the certificate of appropriateness for the most affirmative.
I would second. Do we need to deliberate on this motion? Yeah. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Nope. It passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice presentation.
Yeah, thanks.
All right. So our next item is GB2, a heritage overlay review.
Happy what you want to
do. We mailed them all out.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Vancouver, we have a couple of historic overlay districts, and if the property is within those districts, we bring it to the Historic Preservation Commission to comment on it, to offer suggestions, and to give us an idea of how they feel this project is or is not appropriate. And again, this one's particularly important because it is it's on the National Register of Historic Places. And so it has a little different set of standards. What you'll find is mostly where, as you probably went through the staff report, you noted that it talks a lot about informing the applicant where to look for certain things, which I'm talking to Jan earlier today, they've done that pretty much. So just as background, project was when Mother Joseph came to Vancouver in 1856 from Montreal, Canada. She actually funded the construction of House of Providence and numerous other academies, hospitals, and schools, and orphanages. I stole this off of the nomination form. They're leading baking tours to mining camps. I thought that was interesting throughout the region. Her status is displayed in the National Sanctuary Hall in Washington, D.C. The House of Providence is a three-story brick masonry structure whose symmetry reflects Georgian inspiration. Is that correct?
That's what I get for opening my art.
In 1969, when it ceased to function as a school, Sisters of Providence sold the building, its sister buildings, and 7 acres they sit on, to the Hidden family, whose ancestor Lowell Hidden was persuaded by Mother Joseph to manufacture the bricks used in the building. So, what they're proposing to do is replace the roof, improve the seismic performance of the roof diaphragm, replace the internal gutter, skylights, cornice, and eave trim, replace the south deck columns and railings, repair the south deck, improve the column foundations. And as I indicated, it's in the historic overlay district number 1. Only applies to this project. I did put together from pages 3 through basically the end of the report what the criteria are and what my responses were. The first one, would you like me to go through those? Okay. If you have questions on those, it's all pretty simple because they're really not changing. They're not adding or subtracting from the building. We do have that. Impressive. So, unless you have questions, why don't I turn it over to the applicants?
Could you introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Ryan Wilson, Wilson Architects. My address to you is 404 East 15th Street, number 7, Vancouver, Washington.
These architects and all their graphics bobbing down the computer.
What's that, the PDF one, right?
Should I just like give a hand signal or something?
Yes.
Okay. So the project was originally conceived as really just a re-roof project. But as frequently happens with projects, none of the building systems are completely isolated or autonomous systems, and once you start repairing one area, it has a tendency to lead to a whole bunch of other areas that you recognize should really be done with the same, along with the same time. It was noticed pretty much in the very first feasibility study that they did with this that the roof was of primary importance. It was failing in a number of areas and was leading to all sorts of problems inside the building. They also noticed in the original feasibility study that it would be a good opportunity to look at improvements to the roof diaphragm to improve the seismic performance of the building. These old, you know, that's probably 4 widths of brick for most of the walls. It's a very old, heavy, unreinforced masonry building. They just don't perform very well in seismic events. And a re-roof provides a really great opportunity to improve the performance at that time. You can also see from the picture that especially on the south side there, the roof overhangs the south porches. It's not particularly clear in that picture, but if you're out there, you can see that there's considerable sag in a lot of where the roof meets those porches. And those porches are basically uninhabitable, unoccupiable, at the present time. And so there was a lot of discussion, is it even worthwhile repairing the roof when the porches are failing at this point, and the porches are supporting the roof? So that got brought into the scope of the project as well. And of course, those porches go all the way down to the foundation, are actually part of the support structure for the roof. And that's sort of the general area of where this project is led. Here's a few just general quick facts. The overall roof area is about 26,000 square feet. There are 19 skylights around there. The south porches, and it's just the south porches, I should say, are the 2,000 square feet area, and there are 39 columns there at the south porch as well. So I'll just kind of walk you through what our project is, starting from the bottom and moving up. This was some investigative work we did on the porch column basins. And what you're seeing there is a rubble foundation that's being loosely held together with a type of cement that supports a full masonry column base. So that is brick all the way through. Our proposal will be to remove the rubble foundations and replace them with the new concrete pad foundations. We're going to salvage the brick, but build a concrete column up and then reface the concrete column with a salvaged brick. Moving on to the decks. A lot of those columns, some of them appear to be original. Several of them have been replaced over the years. You can actually see in the middle picture there, that's the southeast column there, and it's just a square column. So it was what used to be sort of a Doric type column, which is most of them are out there. That was replaced. All of the columns were probably hand-hewn at that time, and so there was a little bit of variation between columns. But pretty much all of them are failing at this point, and they really aren't salvageable at this point. In addition, the railing that goes around there is just a 30-inch high railing with all the a lot of the original balusters there as well. And then the decking boards that support the decking boards that provide the walking surface of the deck are failing considerably. They're, you wouldn't want to walk out on them at this point. Okay. So on the columns, our proposal is to replace all of the columns on the south decks. We'll turn new columns to match as close as we can. Once again, the existing columns aren't all 100% equal or identical, but we'll find a prototypical type column and replace those. And then replace all of the balusters, bottom rails, and top rails. And then we're going to add a new cable rail system on top of the existing top rail at the 42-inch height, mainly for life safety purposes.
So the balusters, are they in bad shape?
In terrible shape. We don't allow tenants or anybody access to the second and third story. Balusters are shot, columns are shot. The fact that that's even up on the building is kind of holding itself together in random spots. I was up there in a harness doing some investigation, and if I wasn't too careful, I could have fell through the porch very easily. But you can kick a lot of those balusters.
So what are we going to be replacing them with, that mix of cable rails and balusters?
Why?
If you're going to fully replace them, why would you make a mix of them?
Well, we want to keep the historic height of those rails rather than try to raise them up. So if you were to walk out there, you would see basically what the original railings look like at the 30-inch height. And then the wire rails up above, the cable rails, are just for life safety, and we're trying to do something that's very, has a very light touch, I'll say. and it would be very obvious if you walked up what the original rails looked like versus what was added on at a later date.
Could you make, or since you're replacing the balusters anyway, have the same profile and proportions, but up to the ADA or whatever, the height?
The life safety, yeah. You could, yeah.
It seems to me that that would be less historic. I don't know, it seems like the combination of the two is sort of awkward.
What's the 42 inches?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So why couldn't, just to piggyback on what Alex said, why couldn't you, if you're going to remanufacture the balusters, couldn't you just make them 42 inches? I mean, I think that would be a better visual appeal than sort of, I'm assuming it's going to be heavy metal cable.
Well, I think the cable is going to, it's very thin.
Well,
if I can jump in here.
Yeah.
The cable rail system, for one, appears a lot darker on the photo than what we're going to see. We have a very big Wilson Architects just basically copied what we've had done at the artillery barracks down here. So it's the thin, it's the very stainless steel cable. So you don't even see the cable when you're looking at the porch. The reason that we're keeping that profile, it was, number one, our intent to replicate the original. Number two, we actually talked to Nicholas Ben at DAP, and he was of the opinion that, I mean, he's very hard stance on the fact that any modification to that profile will seriously detract from the history of that building because that's what it looks like. So that was kind of a non-negotiable for him.
Raising
the rail up and changing the, you know, you can keep the middle of the, we talked about that. Keep the middle of the profile of the baluster the same and just lengthen blocks on the top and bottom. But that wasn't a direction that we were given. So, I understand, you know, I think you can go.
If I may add, my conversation with Nick up at Olympia, once he reviewed the drawings that we sent to him, I agree with Corey, what he said was the existing profile of the current balusters and the height of them is, in his position, one of the most important things to the building of that elevation. The interaction of the cable rail basically takes reduces the visibility detracts less from the overall scope of the building, but provides a factor of safety so that the decks can be usable. But from the street perspective and or how it's viewed by visitors, you still get the feel of the original building without a major, if you raise those up to 42 inches, you felt would be proportionally balanced from what was originally designed to be.
Okay.
When I saw this in your presentation, I kind of expected there to be some reaction. I had a reaction to it as well. But I know one of the precepts of restoration is if you add something, you should be able to take it away and leave what was originally there without it being changed. So I can see that, and from a designer mind, went through the same internal discussion of, it has to be something very, very light that, light touch that kind of goes away. It's the images in the presentation are a little grating, and it's such a contrast of something very, very modern with the cable and stainless steel cable. So I understand, and I had the same reaction. I wish that we had time to walk over to the artillery barracks and see in daylight. but given what Nick has said, I'm moving toward feeling more comfortable.
Is there another example of where this has been done? Because I make it a habit to travel around the country and see historical districts, and I take lots of pictures. And I've never seen a cable like this up on top of a balcony. And I think it will change the entire look and feel when you walk out there.
I have. It's actually a fairly common approach.
Where have you seen
it? I've seen it in Philadelphia. That's the main place I've seen it. Mostly in residential settings, not in commercial. But it's a pretty standard approach.
On historical.
Mm-hmm. These days, the cable approach is a pretty standard approach now. And it's, you know, I would say looking at the facade that, yeah, it might be 12 inches, but one of the things about that facade is the diminutive character of those balustrades, which is actually, I think, fairly striking. And if you raised it up, one, you'd be doing something weird with those balustrades one way or the other. Either you're putting a block at the top and the bottom, which changes their character, or you're elongating them, which changes their character. Everything that you would do to make that balustrade taller is going to change its character, but it's also going to change the way that the entire facade reads. Because, you know, these, I can see why they look a little bit more prominent because they're drawn in, you know, basically. But I do know that, I'm pretty sure that I remember what the ones over in the reserve look like. And it does disappear a little bit better. One of my questions, though, is that did you consider a glass panel system to extend it up? Because that would disappear even more.
Yes.
And the problem with that one is your reflection. You might, if the light was right, you'd probably notice it more than anything.
Well, I'm just wondering if you considered it and why you chose to go this route.
Yeah, we talked about doing either a glass or some sort of a plexiglass panel as well. You know, it still needs a frame for support. I think at the end of the day, we felt that the cables are really going to disappear, probably.
And then, so you said that the columns are failing. How are they failing?
Oh, especially at the bottom. So the columns sit right on top of the decking boards.
Mm-hmm.
And there's obviously been water ponding on the top of the deck. And so that connection between the columns and the deck at the base is deteriorated in pretty much every case. And frequently at the top connection to the, where it connects to the porch above or to the roof above as well.
So it's really just the end grains that are failing.
Those are the worst, mm-hmm. Yeah. There are some that are failing even
through and through.
Yeah.
And did you look at the option of just replacing the material at the top and the bottom on the ones that aren't as bad?
I think structurally it would be a challenge. I mean, how would you? Because you'd have to find some way to.
There's a standard approach to do it, where you do a stepped cut at the bottom and the top. So instead of just cutting it flush, you actually cut in halfway, cut down, cut out halfway, and then you replicate the material that you removed, and so you have this stepped joint instead of a flat joint, and that allows you to laterally connect the scab to the post, and it also allows you to do adhesives on the inside. So that allows you to just replace the end grain material that's been lost and not replace the entire post. And on some of them, you know, if they're gone, they're gone. But if you're only talking about, you know, a certain amount of material at the top and the bottom, at least the historic columns, I mean, you got those square ones, let those go. But at least on the historic columns, to be able to maintain the material. And a similar situation with the balusters, you know, that if they're holding in place, then some of them have at least some integrity. And so being able to maintain what material can be maintained, I think, is important. Totally understand that sometimes stuff is just, it's too rotten, it's too far gone, and you have to replace it. But not all of it, I would imagine, is so far gone that every single baluster has to be replaced. And so I think that that's something that I would really encourage you to do, is to not just make the decision to replace everything, but to save as much material as possible, as reasonable, and rebuild what can be rebuilt, and then also introduce the replicated ones where they need to be introduced.
I agree with Sean. He wasn't here the last time that you came before us, and I asked Corey how many of the columns were beyond repair. Not all of them were, and not all of the balusters were either. And we had some discussion on the commission about saving as many of, obviously the square one has to go, but the round one and the ones that were still had some structural integrity, maybe the step cut that Sean is mentioning would help save them, because I think we discussed very passionately about possibly saving as many as we could rather than just complete and total, you know, wipe out all of them, because that's part of the historic essence of that building.
Right.
And if the balustrades are so important in the diminutive nature, then they're important in their integrity.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, after, I'm sorry.
One second. Is this supposed to be a certificate of a
No, it's not on the local register.
Just because it's on the national register?
Because it's in one of the heritage overlays. So you have the Main Street heritage overlay, and then you have this one that's just this building.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a recommendation.
Special point tonight, we just make
recommendations.
Yeah. Great. Yeah.
So, you know, I hear and agree in spirit to what Sean was saying. I just hope your structural engineer can make a pencil.
That they have looked at all of them, and we haven't had that specific discussion about, you know, just replacing parts of the columns or whatever, but I mean, as of now, his recommendation is replacing them all. He didn't find any up there that had, he was recommending trying to save.
Structural engineers are notorious for their distrust of historic wood. You know, their response is to replace everything. Oh, it's not rotted, but it's old, so I don't know. You know, like it's not in my wood strength tables, so let's replace it.
We gotta make the calc.
Yeah, I can't make the calc on the historic wood, despite the fact that it's tight grained old growth and is stronger than anything that he's gonna put in there. I had another question about the built-in gutter. So,
I'll keep going then.
Well, yeah.
But I do want to talk about how many of the balustrades are still there, because we had this discussion before, and before you can get a chance to answer that question.
So, you know, after we looked a lot more in depth, I had to take historic paint samples, send them to Pennsylvania for maps and so on, and, you know, I would say I probably misrepresented how many I thought were good when we last met.
Okay.
Because going baluster to baluster to look to find samples was not very pleasing in what I saw. And so, you know, if I were to tell you, okay, I mean, I do preservation for a living. So it's my charge to keep, you know, keep what we can, because once you lose history, it's gone. Totally get that. But if, you know, if you want to see 10 balusters out of, you know, 250 or however many are up there, you're just better off having a brand new uniform look with the longevity of the wood, so it's going to be built to last, and it's going to look the same. So that's kind of where we find ourselves now, is every single one has got rot under the paint. There is something going on. The neck's broken, but it's painted, and it doesn't look like it is. They're just really poor.
Are they cedar?
So, they're actually fir, but they're, you know, 1871 fir. So they've lived a useful life. There are some that have been replaced in there, you know, in pieces, and we do that here on Officers Row all the time. You know, structurally, I'll just really quick speak to the column thing. In the 80s, whoever did work on the Officer's Row porch, or, you know, who managed the property between then and now with the trust, we have many wrapped columns that are, you know, pieced together, because that was their idea with trying to curb the end rot and so on. So I hear what Sean is saying about that, you know, but being structural and having roof load go down three stories to footing is a major concern with the columns.
Thank you.
But, yeah.
What's the new material going to be?
It's going to be fir. The balusters will be mahogany for longevity purpose. So we talked to Nick Van about that. It's really difficult nowadays to find good enough fir to turn for balusters. There's just so many knots and just the intrusion of water and, you know, glue lamp 2x4s to make a balister.
And did you consider cedar?
Yes. Just a consideration is mahogany is stronger and it's going to last a lot longer than cedar from a maintenance standpoint. So,
painted wood.
Yeah, I know.
I'm fine. Whatever. I'm just curious.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Can I get some mahogany? Can I
ask Well, you can use Philippine mahogany or Honduran mahogany, so it's probably going to be one of the two. I'm not sure if that's exactly specified yet. It's easier when you talk to the wood turner we use. I think it's Philippine mahogany. When we talk to our wood turner that I use in Aurora, he's finding that the material turns excellent. So. Last row.
And primed on all six sides.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The deck systems themselves, essentially what they are is there are beams that stretch from the building to the outer edge where the column line is, and then joists that run perpendicular those, so that the decking boards run perpendicular to the exterior wall. You kind of see that on the right side. The picture, the wider angle picture there shows, one of the things that's showing is that the decks on the second and third level actually form the cover of the deck below them. At the moment, the only real weather protection on the top of those decks is 6 or 7 layers of paint, and just over the years, water gets through and has deteriorated the framing system and the soffits as well below. So the system we're proposing is basically to keep this same system in place on the lower deck, where it's just over the dirt below, but on the second and third level, to replace the decking boards with plywood so that we can put a pedestrian coating on there and weatherproof those, protect the framing board.
So traditionally it's a tie roof for decking.
So which will replicate on the
Now I want to ask, how
did Nick Van respond to that?
That was his idea.
He felt that was his comment was in, or was it experienced in New Orleans?
Uh-huh.
That's a good solution to protect the second, third story deck areas. His opinion was, with the installation of the plywood and then the traffic coating, it was more beneficial to protect the beadboard soffits below than try to mimic the plank decking above that would eventually damage the single beam below. So we felt that would be great, an excellent solution to that second, third, four levels.
And are those soffits, that beadboard going to stay? Is that getting replaced too?
Replaced, yeah.
With in kind?
In kind.
In kind, yeah.
Is that level, or is that going to have a slight grade?
It will have a slight grade that wants the waterproof membrane to put on it.
What's there now?
It's flat.
Flat would be.
So it's a little flat, a slight grade when you're done?
Yeah.
How does that decking hold up that you guys are proposing? How does it age, I guess, in thinking about it?
Oh, that'll be a 50-year system. And a lot of times, the only maintenance you have to do is put a reapply. And so it'll be a liquid apply, and you can just reapply the top coat.
Just curious for the product.
It'll probably jump out. Yeah, we'll do a step-resistant coating as well. Part of the problem is any of those, if you try to do a tumbling groove, you've got a joint every 4 inches. You just can't put a waterproof membrane with that many joints. Tumbling groove is always going to move a little bit. So. All right, up to the roof. So the roof system, I guess I'll just go quickly with the history. There's probably 4 or 5 different roof systems there right now. There's a mixture of standing seam metal, there's membranes, there's some sort of mechanically fastened roll roofing in locations. And the way the building was designed is cornices that form the exterior edge of the building are actually like a built-in gutter system. As far as, well, getting back down to the bottom, the original roof appears to be a standing seam metal roof. And that, so we're going to remove all of the current roofing systems and replace them with a new standing seam metal roof get it back to what it was originally. And then that gutter system, it's primarily wood. There are small locations where it's become a sheet metal, like a formed sheet metal, which is actually what you see in that picture. But the majority of them are actually like a wood gutter system. And most of them are failing where the downspouts are. So our proposal is to remove the sheet metal ones and replace them with a wood gutter system similar to what it is on the rest of the building. And then we're going to do a liquid applied gutter system in there, in those locations as well. I know there was a question about the internal gutter systems.
Yeah, I'm curious that it looked from the plans that there was, I could only find one detail of it. And I'm just curious how it was, what the flashing between the roof and the gutter was like.
Yeah, that would be, once again, it's a membrane. It'll be a liquid applied membrane, probably Tremco again, that can go up, that'll go up the sheathing, and then the metal roof will come over the top of it and then flash down into the gutter.
Okay. And what's the lifespan of that kind of membrane?
Oh, well, this is a waterway location, so it's not going to be as good as it would in other locations, but I mean, I'd still probably guess it's going to be in 25 to 30 years.
And why are you going with, if the roof is going back to the original metal material, and the original gutter was also metal, why are you going with the wood product?
Well, I don't know that the original gutter was metal. It may have been. I don't know, do we have any idea what the original gutters were?
No, it appears that it's just wood.
Yeah.
What are the materials on those gutters going to be? Is it cedar? Is it fir?
Fir, yeah.
So the original ones were fir?
Yeah, there's still fir up there. Looking from the underneath, you can see the pan that's in there. So it's, you know, repairing what's, we're going to repair what needs repairing.
Are you replacing?
So we're not replacing all the internal gutter systems, just repairing those, repairing the cornice moldings with like-for-like material everywhere, but in order to maintain the integrity of that built-in gutter.
So the new cornice gutters will be more firm?
Yeah, it's just the lining he's talking about, inside the gutter itself.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, historically, they would have carved it out in wood and then just tarred it.
Right.
But just layer after layer of tar, and that becomes part of regular maintenance. So, I mean, what you're proposing is really not that different than the historic approach.
The existing framing conditions along the south side, as we, as Carr and I were up, when we're hotter up the roof, the rafters seem to be sculpted rafters that form that gutter. And then it was a 1x planking material or 3/4 planking material that actually formed the trough. And then they
received.
Yeah. It's a single piece, but it's a hand cut rafter tail that forms that gutter internal gutter system along the south side.
So that was pretty major solid logs if they did that.
Well, it's a two by member. It's around roughly about a 2x member, but that end is shaped, and it's shaped to make that little.
It carries the others, have you seen?
Yeah. Rafter tail covers the gutter. Yeah, it's a unique.
Yeah,
somebody had some skill.
It's pretty common.
Yeah.
For building in those internal gutters, and I don't know what it is with the late 1800s, and I'm loving those built-in gutters that are just doomed to fail. But that's usually how they did it.
Yeah.
So we should probably move a little faster if we can.
Okay.
None of the conversations.
Yeah.
All right.
We're almost done.
We're the ones causing your delay. So.
So here it's just sort of a quick model showing the type of standing seam rough that we're looking at and how it's all replaced. And then finally, there are a number of skylights that have been added at various times over the years. And it's odd. I mean, there's really no two skylights that are the same. They're all in trouble. They're all failing in various areas. And some of them just go into the attic space. There's a few that are over the chapel area. So our proposal is basically to remove the ones that are just currently going into the attic and only the attic, and to replace the ones that are going into the chapel.
Were those original chapel?
Yes.
Okay.
So you said the original material was a metal roof?
As far as we can tell.
As far as you can tell.
Yeah, the application for the National Register hypothesized that they might be like shakes, but we can't find any evidence that that was the case. And photographs going back into the 1800s, I mean, they're grainy and a little bit difficult to tell, but I mean, they look like standing seam metal roofs to me. So.
And is there any reference at all to the color of the original roof?
No.
So St. James, which was, you know, just a few blocks away, had a standing copper roof for a long time. And is there any thought that it might have been copper? I know that a standing copper roof is going to be a much different project.
My theory is that it was tin that was painted red.
No, it's actually tin on there now. So when you go down the four layers of roof where it exists, all the other four layers of roof are just laid over the original tin, and it's just shot. And when I peeled up a part of the tin, you're just hitting the sheeting.
Okay.
That's it. And there's no shingle, debris, I mean, there's literally not a shred of sawdust or anything anywhere. So.
Is there any evidence of the red?
Yeah, but when I send a paint sample in, I scraped the tin, and that's all there is red.
Okay.
So probably it was a red roof.
Yeah.
Red roof.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering the
very
cheap materials they've chosen in a lot of the other places, tin certainly wouldn't surprise me.
Well, and it wasn't unusual because the lantern does have flat seam copper,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't
That's
unusual. Yeah, but it wasn't unusual. I mean, painting tin red was sort of poor man's copper.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cheaper way to do copper, so that's my hunch.
So do you have enough to go on with the original tin roof to be able to replicate the spacings of the seams and the heights and so forth closely, or at least choose a product that's pretty close?
I think we can get pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
questions or comments?
What's this acrylic skylight? Is that part of the plan?
We're still talking about the replacement skylights.
Are they visible from the ground plane?
No.
But the original ones were flat, as they were at, so having a dome would be a modernization,
yeah.
A modern interpretation.
Okay.
Like a steel frame, plate glass would have been.
Yeah.
I love those tar stains.
As much light.
Yeah, that's
a red star.
Tar stained with wire glass.
Yeah, it reminds me of my skylight in Philly. So.
Is there anything else we need to add, or should we move to the next item? Just a thought.
Wait, and the only thought I had was you said some upgrade on the roof, but it's a reinforced masonry. And I'm sure the structural engineer is thinking about the implications there.
Yeah, so
I don't know how the load path works out when you're stiffening the roof.
Yeah, and we have talked about that quite a bit. We'll anticipate connections between the wall and the diaphragm as maybe part of a future project. But yeah, there's going to be some sort of blocking and some additional reinforcing where the roof and the wall intersect. So that in the future, if you know we want to put some fiberglass sheets on the inside or something, we have some connection points there.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any comments?
Yeah, we pretty much commented on every aspect. We have a final. The next item is 812 Main Street, the Old Springs building. And we have the staff. Do we have staff?
We have staff.
Great.
The next part
you have to flip your.
Well, it's not a public hearing, so you don't have to.
Sure, why not? Well, we'll go through this. This is the same sort of situation that you've been through on several projects, much like the Lucky Long one we did last month. By the way, have you seen it?
Seen the what?
Have you seen
the
Lucky Long?
Oh, they've started?
It's already done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which really makes the sign that they decided not to do stand out like sore thumb. But they did a great job on the metal stuff at the top and the collection of prayer. So, yeah, they were out there 2 days later.
Wow.
I was impressed.
I saw them distributed paint.
Last week I'm pretty sure it was gone. So we've got the same sort of situation. We're looking at a piece of property that, misinterpretations, somehow the building got opened up without coming here to the committee to look at. This is the building that I think we brought in 2 or 3 months ago. The request is revision for both the west and the north, excuse me, the east and the north facades of the 1812 building. Yeah, you can go ahead.
Okay. Okay,
so what I did is I went on Maps Online, went to Google Earth, or not Google Earth, but Street. And interestingly enough, I think that's fairly recent. So that's what the facade looks like approximately right now. Next one. And as you can see, that not much has been done that you can see to the north facade. I've listed what the proposed upgrades include. What the requirements of the Heritage District Number 2 are. This is on page 2. We talk about windows, construction generally. And I put responses in for pretty much everything that I thought was appropriate on this particular request. And so what we're looking at is feedback from the commission on the appropriateness, although it's not a certificate of appropriateness, so bear that in mind, on the appropriateness of what's proposed. For some reason, that's difficult. So these are some close-ups of the existing materials as they appear now. And then you see it's a manual text. Would you like to take over from me?
Sure, yes. So as John said, I, as a commission member, I became aware of this at the same time everybody else did, saw it in its state, and was approached to help with the development of a... Actually, there had been a design done speculatively, and we picked up what had been done to date and added our own input, and that's where we are today. The current state of the building, the owner contractor, again, the demolition permit that allowed them to do some interior demolition and some exterior demolition, which I think the intent of which was to allow them to install a storefront system. So that's for the owner and contractor, that's kind of driving factor is getting the storefront system in the building weather tight. And it's probably raining right now, so that's a pressing issue for them. So what we found was, can you go back to the existing condition photos? The one with the multiple detail images. So if you look at the east facade photo on the left, you can see the Italianate round top windows with a nice slice out of the bottom of for a trio of 8-foot by 8-foot square, very modern windows. When I saw that, my first reaction was, oh, that's just lovely. The brickwork, the arches, is there any way we can save them? So looking a little bit harder at the condition that the building was left in with the work that was done in 1950 when it was transformed from the original structure into a sponge shoe store, that I guess what would be a 24-foot wide opening under those arched window tops was completely cut out. A large steel channel was installed, supported by 6-inch pike columns that, if you look in the upper right-hand picture, it says detail of 8-foot square windowsill. You see the base of one of those pipe columns. Those pipe columns rest on some steel that, if you look at the picture immediately below that, where it says detail below 3 8-foot square windows, you can see a piece of channel extending to the right, that 6-inch tube pipe column rests on a channel. That channel rests on some very rubble-like masonry, and that's what the contractor discovered when he went to look at, well, how am I going to install these transom windows? and looking at trying to find purchase for the head of the transom window, he removed some material and found that there was loose, I guess, CMU infill. That's concrete masonry, 4-inch concrete masonry below those 8-foot square windows, and there was stucco on that, and it just, this is why the story's been relating to me, was that it just basically fell apart as they touched it. They broke into it, it fell apart. So what we're left with, as wonderful as that old existing brick from what I believe was either 1895 or 1905 or your comments in 1914, I'm not sure. But I know that the little bit of research I did on history said that vaudeville in exactly this type of building was a big thing in 1885. So I suspect across the country it was. I suspect that it was probably definitely the correct date. So that beautiful brick was essentially taken out of play when Dalehorn, who was the architect of the 1950 remodel, designed the Spelman shoe store makeover. He really he turned it into a white box on the hill with a little bit of what I call Art Deco trim, the Art Deco detailing, 50s style inside, and inspired, a lot of his work was inspired by Art Deco detailing. It was a different building, and there's no going back to 1895. I don't know if Frank would want to go back to 1950, so if you move forward to the slide. So we're proposing that we try to improve on what was presented last time and go to 2016, retaining as much of 1950 as we can, so we're retaining the horizontal, retaining, restoring the, starting from the top, working down, the stucco panel that was prominent above in the Spelman shoe store version. It was prominent above that horizontal aluminum trim that you see at the top of the rain steel cladding. Retaining that, restoring it, infilling with stucco over some type of substrate that's in discussion right now. And then below that line, where now it's exposed brick, kind of a disaster zone, applying what is essentially a rain screen system, but it is not wooden. It is a fiber cement panel product that that passes around, that has a lid pass, and actually is up on the wall, quite attractive.
So this is the middle section.
That's the middle section. So that comes in inch by 10-foot panels that stack on a clip system. So that material will wrap the east facade and a section of the north facade and wrap around those deep upper windows and be restored. Working on down from that point, the 2 foot by 2 foot transom windows that came to us as a given. They are partially installed and the contractor owner already purchased the remaining pieces. So I'll just leave that at that. The 18-inch canopy. Jack, if you go back to the photographs. The center of a picture, if you look down at that below, that gap is where the transom windows would go. Where Jackie's cursor is right now, there's a good old eye, and then I believe beneath that is a built-up channel, 12 by 12, opening to the street, where originally there was a cranked awning, right, from back in the day. inches is where we started. We're trying to expand that a little bit so it offers a little bit of rain protection but does not create a dark shadow area for the storefront of this. And that is in keeping with the Northern Vancouver Downtown Association. Back to the picture. The rest is the storefront again, already purchased and in place. Those are the primary components of that we've set up on the east side. The next slide should show the north facade. You can see where the planning material wraps, stops with the window system. Then we switch to stucco. We continue the aluminum trim band on the top of the where it exists currently, the top of the claim system on to the west to the end of the building. We pick up the metal accent band that follows as we work our way down to the bottom of that large stucco field. Center of the facade. We pick up the there's a current accent band. Frankly, I'm not sure if that dates back to the Spelman and Shoe Store era or if it's something that was done during the Spankies era. But we're continuing that in a metal to match the canopy to break between the facade. Break between the stucco area and what would essentially be the base of the building. And that building base is in the cladding system and the fiber cement cladding system and two materials, a sandstone texture at the base and a concrete-like texture. Moving west, we're potentially restoring the door to the left of the new storefront. See what happens with that. There is some concrete masonry infill at that opening. The owner is working out his tenant space allocations with his realtor, and I'm not sure if that door is going to go or not. Right where Jackie has a personnel is a new storefront entry. The proposal is to cut out one of the 4x4 windows, enlarge that, and make it more serviceable as an additional mercantile entry to make the augment this color-wise, we'll go to the next slide, the material color. The colors kind of dark. You never know how they're going to show up on the screen. We did bring some drawdowns. Let's see. They're fairly accurate. This is the upper stucco band. So the stucco will be restored in it. Center, you can see the color of the cladding, the center where Jackie's cursor is now, is the drawdown isn't that accurate. It's actually a little warmer, less green than what you see here. And then the end cap at the west end is kind of harmonizing blue. We are looking at potentially some highlights with a little bit of green in that end. We're not sure how that's going to work. The accent band would match the bronze anodized windows. The coping would match it as well. And then the dark paint below the coping at the top of the wall. So that's the basic composition. Let me talk about that piece in the middle of the large transept style.
Where is that? I'm having trouble following you. On the right side in the middle?
The center circle panel. We have a very large expansive stucco there, uninterrupted wall, and we have this historic building. We're proposing to the owner that if there's any way to fund it, we consider doing some kind of what we're proposing is actually a mural that would be made of a collage of laser cut metal and imprinted metal pieces. We brought some samples to give you an idea of what that might be. And I don't know if there's a way to zoom in on that at all. There's probably not some detail to see, but we're looking at a frame of kind of Andrian-esque shapes with historic images located in some of the spaces that are created by that framework. So this is what you see. I'm holding this up because it's by a company that does photographic process on metal panels. So if you and this is the frame. So you can't see the images very well, just thanks for trying to zoom in on it. They're basically this is the concept that
collections of the historic photos of that building.
The building, Main Street, adjacent.
Would it be showing that it's a vaudeville? It was a vaudeville theater.
Well, that's kind of hard to show. but it would show. It would include a 1917 image of the original facade.
You could write the word vaudeville. It's great.
You can.
There's different ways to do it.
Yeah. This is just a concept. So this is where I think any suggestions or recommendations would be. Including potentially how this such a concept might be funded. But there are just some wonderful old photos, and what you see included there are photos from the original facade all the way through to Spanky's and buildings on adjacent corners. It was kind of fun to put together. It really is important.
Those windows around those smaller square windows, are those like glass brick?
Yeah, those are
true windows.
Those are existing windows.
Okay.
From again, history of the building, I'm not sure they may have been, but if it's a shoe store, they may have been display windows. But they're existing openings.
The ones above. Yeah.
Those, oh, those.
Yeah.
Oh, and as I was saying earlier, those are in place. They are aluminum storefront transom.
Okay.
So clear glass, I believe. But all the aluminum is as I said, given.
Built this way, I think it looks good.
Tell me again why the arches. The arches originally used to hold glass.
Do you want to go back to that?
The structural integrity is totally lost.
Well, yeah, there's a couple of things. And as I said, you because I sit in your seat as well. When I first looked at that, I'm thinking, that would be way that. It would be so cool to be able to. And one of the early concepts I was playing with was, if it was a translucent red screen with some kind of some mysterious way to preserve the length of those arches, and you could see the history through this metal screen, so you got modern and you got 1895 and then you got the 1950 shapes. But the reality is, if you zoom in on that brick, and one thing is, when the Dayhill-born upgrades or alterations, as you call them, happen, that brick was, you know, there are dentils that were cut off. There was a lot of surface damage. That I think that whole area had that infill, that masonry, concrete masonry infill. So all the masonry ties and the grout. If you went to my photo sheet, you might be able to get a good sense for how rough some of that is.
Is there a thought about using some brick in this model, incorporating it into big spaces and stucco? I mean, somewhere where, as a decorative element, even, you know, rather than just throwing it out there to break up some of the stucco, might be less expensive than an art installation.
In 1950, when Dayhill-born did his work, there was no brick. And from an aesthetic standpoint, I can understand why there was no brick. And I can understand.
I mean, he had no brick. There was brick on the building.
He did not expose brick on the facade. And actually, I believe the interior was completely furred. Other than opening up the wall, you probably would not have known what was here. We love our day. but an architect I know once said, with a project that didn't go quite so well, there's another street I can't drive down. And for Dayhill-born, he's done some beautiful things, but
this wasn't one.
Alas. You know, there are some really charming things about the set. I really like that grid of windows on the west end of the north facade. And was a little troubled about having to break that up with opening up an entry. I think it still works. As far as adding brick, as an aesthetic, I'm pushing that to do that just because it would look like brick that was added, I mean, that was exposed so that you would be exposing this brick and it would not harmonize with much anything else going on.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Italianate brickwork is ornate, and then the whole 1950s
Well, I'm glad you at least explored some, you know, options for revealing those arches in some way. I understand from a design standpoint why you came to the way you did. I hope you might try again, try harder. But I think the really big thing with all of these is actually the preservation of the fabric. You know, so you have this deteriorated brick underneath this C channel, and so when you do infill, making sure that it is a material of similar hardness to the historic brick, so those things don't move around. You don't have some hard chunk in there that grinds all the bricks around it, which is going to be good for the structural integrity as well. You know, however you attach whatever it is, you know, the material to those arches, at least not making it worse than it is already, because
Well, there's always a chance that in another 50 years, something drastically different could happen. And so minimizing the damage to this already much maligned, you know, much damaged building, I think would be an important set. And then really the material conservation, making sure that there aren't any material incompatibilities between the old and the new, is not only important for just maintaining the historic material, but just maintaining the integrity of that building. I mean, it's been just cut to pieces. And you know, you don't want to be introducing anything that's going to be, you know, has the potential to make that worse. And I'd also say that I think my one bit about the fake wood grain material is I have a personal bias against it, because there's no historic wood looks like that. You know, no real wood material looks like that. The only time you ever see grain exposed like that is in a 25-year-old fence that was never, you know, treated and wore that way. All real wood is sawn flat, or it's, you know, split shapes. It's one or the other. None of it is that fake grain.
Yeah, I totally share your bias. This was difficult for me. The owner wanted to use a traditional wood grain screen, and in this case, knowing the owner and knowing the intense upkeep that a real wood decided to take, I advised him against
that. Well, I'm fine with the material. I mean, the material itself, you know, those composite materials, it's, you know, those modern materials, I don't think there's anything wrong with them. I don't know if they have a smooth version, no. Yeah. No, that's actually how wood is milled.
Actually, there's two primary manufacturers. One was Ichiyama's Cerclad, and they're probably a couple others, but the options are fairly limited.
Yeah.
And I feel like being that's why, you know, I was saying it looks surprisingly good.
Well, luckily it's going to be, you know, if it's up and away, that's going to help.
Yeah, it does help.
But I think the big thing is preserving what the material can be preserved with whatever it is that goes on top of it. At this point, kind of from a design standpoint, it's an unfortunate loss, and there's a circle of hell for architects to do that sort of thing in some of these buildings. And so, you know, I can understand going a completely different direction with it, but yeah, just not making it worse and documenting it well, you know, so that it can be, you know, so that history is maintained, I think is kind of the best that we can do at this point.
There are live photos.
Because it does strike me that it's going from being an Italian, you know, very vintage looking building, and then you sort of had this wave for us, a difficult Wave War 3 model, and now you're struggling with all of these different design elements and materials and applications. But the end product is going to be, it's going to be reborn, very, very modern building. And that's wonderful, something that's in the historic overlay. So how can we do something to give it some idea of it still being vintage? Because what this looks like to me is very modern. Is there anything we can do to give it sort of a vintage look, just a shadow back to its original?
Are you talking vintage to its original or to the 1950s? Because, I mean, I feel like other than those arches, the original is gone. I mean, the Italianate.
I think that's why I suggested brick, just because when people go through a historic district, they expect historic buildings to have some brick. You know, I mean, even though we know that's not always the case, of course, but it's kind of a texture asking for it.
I think I would leave that open to you. How could we take a building that was built in 1895 and now it's being rebirthed in 30 years later, and it's in the historic overlay. How do we make that building? Because I see the challenges. I mean, this took talent to come up with all of this. I get that. I'm not an architect, but I see it. But how do we still give it that shadow of its original vintage character? Because right now it's looking very modern.
So the words that came to my mind when I first really went through the process of grappling with this beautiful arch from the tops, that very, very elevations in great detail. And there are nice little keystones at the tops of those arches that are just, it's great, it's so beautiful, but the words that came to my mind, and every time I ask myself the very same question, was when Dagobarn did his alteration, all bets were on. And it was a 1950s building at that point. It was not an 1895 building. So my answer the second part of that is my answer to it kind of does the last few comments is I think that the most appropriate thing is some kind of display. To the vehicle of the panel on the north facade. And I'm going to push for that. I think an arrangement like that can really tell the story of that corner of downtown, about what that building was, about its history. It can do so in a way that artistically complements the new design.
Yeah, I feel like anything that you would do to try to resurrect anything of the original 19th century would really strike with an authenticity.
You were trying to do it.
Yeah, and the reality is that the 50s restoration means that was the nature of that building for longer than the 19th century building was, unfortunately, from my standpoint. And it was a commodity 1950s. The fact that it had Art Deco details on the inside says that. The Art Deco stuff in the 50s, for the most part, was stuff that was still left in warehouses from the 20s and 30s before the Depression. And once the economy picked up, they just started selling them again, until the stock was gone and then moved on to something else. So even that, there's this real commodity feel to everything that was there before rather than architectural integrity, even to the 50s. So in some ways, reinventing it is in keeping with the life of this building.
I think the other thing to keep in mind is that it doesn't necessarily have to be, it has to be compatible with the surrounding buildings and their historic character. That's something, if we painted it red and it was a glass ball, perhaps that wouldn't be a good idea. But this building has got...
Venturi would be fine.
Pardon?
Venturi would be fine.
Yeah.
Sorry, architect joke.
I kind of feel like this wood horizontal cladding is now showing up everywhere in town, and it seems like a post 2012 thing that's happening everywhere. I mean, which is I don't know. To me, it just strikes up almost like
Pomo Distillery.
I mean, it's just showing up everywhere, and it seems almost like a fad thing that doesn't necessarily speak to a historic district or overlay area, because it is just cropping up on so many new buildings and being used so much. And I don't know whether it's a regional thing or whether it's but it certainly doesn't, to me, speak. It strikes me as very modern and today.
What about replacing the lost Italian arches and putting them over the collage of laser cut metal to emulate what was original?
Like, you're talking about removing them from the wall?
Taking pictures of those beautiful Italian arches, okay? And finding the arches. And if you're going to do laser, if you're going to do artwork anyway, then replicate it over. Because I guess my eye doesn't like the fact that you've got two different elevations on the second floor for the windows anyway. So if you took what I believe is your laser cut steel artwork and arch that in the same manner that the original windows that we all are in love with in the morning glossa, that could take an element of the original design and intent and soul of the building and bring it into the modern era and all this.
That could be really interesting in a future. Those window openings could then be one of your vignette scenes. Could be what frames, and so instead of just the metal framework, you could use that
as your framing element. I think that would look really interesting.
You're bringing it back. Breathing the original life back in a modern interpretation, it would work. Because my eye likes the arches better over there, on the other elevation, on the other side.
Well, if it showed up as an art piece, I think it would work. Where just revealing the original brick didn't quite.
And it's a beautiful project for VSAA. They do this stuff all the time. You asked about funding, and you get all those parents involved.
I've talked with beautiful project.
They do this kind of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
It's a great project. It's downtown. It's the old Shumway School.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I would talk to the principal over there. I know and see what you can work out that direction. But I really like the idea of arching that middle section that you have the metal in the very same way that it was originally arched on the other side with the Italian arches. So says the Italian on the Russian side.
All right, I think maybe probably next our time
Thank
you. You expect nothing less, Rock.
We always stay on time as people.
Yeah.
All right, so.
Man, I'm way off my timing. So just quickly, I'll just go over the budget. I just wanted to update you all on the interpretive panels. So far we know where we're going to put the courthouse one, the loop key, and the museum. And we're on the time frame that you'll be seeing those at your December meeting. So as a draft for you to take a look. Farm ones, I need to go out there with county people and take a look at where those will go. So more info to come on that, and then the plaques will come too. So I think we're on
did
track.
You decide on Alex wrote a beautiful thing about the coloration and all that, and I agree with him.
Okay.
Like
cool. Well, I'll work with Alex. Well, so I think I gave you too many options, but that's I wanted to show you what's out there.
Oh,
so
I think
okay, that's all I have.
One thing for new business.
Okay.
I emailed back about it today. The Georgia Pacific Mill has remodeled their lobby and made it into a little historic museum of field history. And I took a little tour of it today. They're going to have it open every first Friday. And first
done.
Starting this Friday. Yeah. And so I encourage all of us to go and see, because I was really impressed that they've been working on this. It all started because they had some flooding that happened in the main lobby, and next thing you know, they put in all these nice displays, and they made a little museum, and they really love that, the city has such a connection, and people are going to want to have dinner on first Friday and come in and show their grandchildren and stuff where they used to work. So anyways, I talked to them, too, about our grant program, because they have big plans for maybe redoing their entire front of the building into, a plaza. Because it has to be a secure building, they're not open all the time. People will just walk into the lobby, but people could actually look in the window at the display area too. So I thought it might be a prime project for us to participate in. If they apply for a grant or something to get some history on the outside of the building. Anyways, I think it's really cool. I'm really impressed with it. So.
So it's going to be open on the first Friday?
It's going to be open every first Friday. The camera stand was on the first Friday when the old shops stay open late. They just had a promote event. This first Friday is actually, if you dress up as a Star Wars character, you can get prizes in the piece. But there you are. So. Carolyn. She said you knew about it. Anything else, anybody? Okay, motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn the meeting.
Second. Okay, all in favor?
Thank you all.
That was always our quickest motion. They're all easy to
test.
Was she here just to see that?
Yeah.
Okay.
She's just trying to.
See, the interesting thing is,
right, I know, I think that's
awesome.
She named
Teresa.
You want
to
change
the name?
I like to show a little shoe.